I'm going to do something kind of rare, and that's going to give you a roadmap for this sermon, because it starts in a funny place, and then it goes into a not very funny, dark place, and then I hope comes back out again. So it's not the case that I've gotten lost, but I think I can find my way back into it, because it is more complicated than it may seem, particularly at this time in the lives of the people here, the people in this country. My favorite Mother's Day service that I ever gave, I made the terrible mistake, I thought at the time, of having as the worship associate my mother. And my mother got up there and said, "Oh, Jonathan was just a perfect child. He never gave me a moment's pain or reflection or cause to regret. He was so perfect. It was just really amazing. I was never so happy." And then he was born. Which actually tells you everything you need to know about me and where I got whatever I got. She went on to roast me pretty nicely, but I thought I was getting even, because my follow-up was to get up and to sing with absolutely full Al Jolson affect my Yiddish mama, ending up on one knee. And the ultimate proof of a mother's love is she thought it was pretty good. Now, whether this is denial and love really means not only saying that your son can't sing, but actually thinking that your son can sing, I was never sure. I'm still not sure what it was, but I know that it came from a sense of love. And we had a very good time, and it was a great Mother's Day. And I remember having two ministerial colleagues, who were told that something wild and strange was going to happen. And on their days off, they were actually sitting there watching this service and go like this, somewhere between the scream and their absolute denial that you can get away with this kind of stuff, even in a Unitarian Universalist church. Well, it kind of gives you the idea of the challenges that everybody has in the clergy when you have these holidays. What do you do with them? Do you do the debunking of, well, you know, it's all about Hallmark? Do you talk about the fact that more roses and more telephone calls and more money is spent on Mother's Day than on Valentine's? Do you talk about capitalism, or do you go into the true history that it came from a political attempt to recognize women and the importance of women and the importance of motherhood and the power that women had and should have more of to say yes and to say no to those things that go on in our society? Mother's Day has an activist and honorable history. And it really is a celebration of power, of the power that nurturing has in all of our lives. And also the power that the absence of nurturing has and the amount of effort it takes to find ourselves and build ourselves. Because let me say something shocking on this sentimental day. Almost nobody had perfect parents. And almost nobody is a perfect parent. So how do we... There's an exception here. We have a perfect parent and we have a perfect child. Any other parents and children together today that I can grant Unitarian absolution? Okay. It's in the sign of the holy question mark. Absolution is grand. But with those exceptions, most of us are human beings who sometimes take our eyes off of the prize, who don't see our children accurately sometimes, thank goodness, who don't see our children at all sometimes, really, thank goodness. There are milestone events of my children's lives I'm really happy to have missed. And they told me about some of them later on after they were safe and my piggy bank replenished. Was it them or was it me not paying attention? When I think of all of the gifts that my parents and my mother gave me, I'm deeply grateful for what I had. And as time goes by and as I became a parent and a grandparent, I became increasingly understanding of who my parents were as I lost some of that teenage criticalness of parents can't do anything right and they don't understand me and there's just no way that they really love me because if they did, then I could have whatever it was that I desired at the time. There's nothing like growing up a little bit to give one some perspective and some understanding. But as we celebrate this day, we celebrate and sometimes we mourn the parents that we had and the parents that we didn't have, because that also is something that touches our hearts. And it's an emotional kind of day. Every year, and I thought, because I forgot the name of the second hymn, I thought I was going to get out of this without crying this year. But when All Through the Night gets sung, I end up teary-eyed. It just gets to me because in some ways I remember both as parent and as child the All Through the Night times. The times when my mother stayed up all through the night when I was having an asthma attack or running a high fever, when I stayed up all through the night when our children were ill, when I paced all through the night relatively recently with grandchildren who, despite the fact that they are otherwise perfect, occasionally get colicky, but it must have been something they ate because it can't be characteristic. We get some kind of understanding and perspective of how it is to grant and to feel unconditional love. How it is that you can actually have love at first sight. That you can meet this little critter and just have your heart go out in ways that you may never have thought possible. I lived in some fear of impending parenthood. I was excited on the idea of becoming a father, and I wanted to be a father, and I loved kids when I was a camp counselor, and I understood that I didn't have to change them, and I could go home. And the idea of having to change them, and we were already home, was a little daunting to a 25-year-old. But it was love at first sight. It was connection and an opening and a giving of heart at the first time I saw my child. And it happened with every other child and grandchild. It's really pretty amazing what must be built into most of us that we can give our hearts and open our hearts and let them be so vulnerable to all of the hopes and to all of the fears. And that's what it is to be a parent. That's what it is really to love. Because what this holiday is about, without the debunking or without the politicizing, it is about love. Which takes me to the foreshadowed shadows of this talk. And that is, last Sunday after I left here, I went to conduct a panel on terrorism at American Jewish University. We were generally against it. And afterwards, and of course this was before the news of Bin Laden being killed was released. It was happening at that very moment that we were conducting this panel. And so Helene and I were sitting on our couch watching 60 Minutes, expecting something, I don't know, depressing probably. And we got the bulletin that everybody got. Something's coming on, something's going on, something big is going to be announced. And of course it got dribbled out. If you want to know why we don't share secrets, it's because people can't keep secrets. So the first announcement is, stay tuned, something big is going to be announced. Stay tuned, something big, but we can't tell you what it is, but it involves a foreign situation. Stay tuned, we think we got Gaddafi. No, stay tuned, it involves something else. Stay tuned, the president's going to announce that we killed bin Laden. And so then we had a half hour of them telling us what the president was going to say, because once they informed leadership and leadership informed their assistants, the assistants had to show how smart and how inside they were by calling up everyone they knew. This is why conspiracies don't work. This is why secrets can't be kept, because people brag. So the president came on, as you all may have noticed, and made the announcement. And my wife and I got into not a fight, but at least a little kind of match about what's the appropriate response. She is kind of more emotional than I am, so it was the dancing in the streets response. I absolutely get it. Let's make it a holiday from now on. And I had the more Talmudic response, which is this immediately following Passover. There's a Talmudic story that when the Egyptians were being swallowed by the sea, that the angels were rejoicing. And God rebuked the angels, saying, "You dare not rejoice. These are my children too." It's a hard line, because the truth is we're human. And I had a sense of satisfaction, not of closure. You don't get closure. Not really of justice. There really isn't justice. But there were complex feelings about that. And so we talked about it, and we come down in slightly different positions, and the message is, it's okay. This is complicated, emotional material. But what came after that, and I'm very clear on this, the dancing in the streets, the sport nature of USA, USA, is, to me, unseemly. But there was something important that came out of this for me. And that is, I was listening to former Solicitor General Ted Olson being interviewed, whose wife was on one of the planes, the one that crashed into the Pentagon. And I was also listening to Story Court on NPR. And people were talking about those phone calls from their loved ones who were on the plane. And they all shared something in common. They were saying goodbye. And they were saying, I love you. And the same thing was true of those phone calls coming out of the towers before they came down. What people were saying, they were pulling out their phones, they knew pretty conclusively that these were their last moments on Earth. And they weren't screaming hysterically. They certainly weren't regretting trivialities. They were saying the most important words we say to each other and demonstrate to each other. They were saying, I love you. I love you. It doesn't make pain go away. It doesn't banish death. It may seem like it's just words, but they aren't just words. Love is real, and when you find that out in extremis, it's a lesson that we can all take and really be satisfied by. That we know whatever the ephemera in the world, whatever the things we have, whatever the trivialities that we think in a moment are important and are worth being upset and angry and frightened and all those other things, the thing that is most important is the love that we feel, the love that we give, the love that we make, the love that we receive. It is in the giving of our hearts that we're born, that we are connected to life beyond ourselves. Those experiences that I've had, those near-death experiences that, well, that I was aware of, I probably had a lot that I wasn't, but the ones that I've been aware of had the same components to them. When I was on the table at the ER in San Francisco and I couldn't move and I couldn't breathe and I thought I was dead, what I didn't feel was fear. What I did feel was a sense of love. Of, even though I couldn't talk because you can't move and you can't breathe, I couldn't say anything. What filled me was a sense of love for my family and particularly for my child, who was a child back then. When the Northridge earthquake happened, and I happened to be alone at home, Helene was off with a friend in Ojai. I was sure that the epicenter of the earthquake was under the bed, and I was pretty sure that I was going to die. And what was in my heart was not so much fear as it was love, as it was, oh, my sweetheart, I love you. And I automatically, not consciously, but automatically wanted to carry that mantra into the darkness and to take that love with me wherever it is that we go. I think that's what it's about. That's what it's about on Mother's Day. That's what it's about on Father's Day, on Valentine's Day, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It is being aware of how our hearts connect. It's celebrating our vulnerability. It's celebrating that we're not the amoeba, done and not needing another amoeba ever again, but that we are lovers, we are people, we need each other. That's why we gather together at weddings to celebrate new love and people who are committing themselves to building a life and a family together. And we celebrate our hopes, and since we know the statistics, we also celebrate our fears. It's why we gather together at a birth. In 2 weeks, we're going to have probably 100 people stuffed into our living room as our newest grandchild is going to be named on Sunday afternoon in 2 weeks. We come together to celebrate a naming, sure, but we come together to celebrate a birth, a new life, where we symbolically and by our presence stand with the future and give our hearts to someone else's keeping, or at least a part of our hearts. It's why we come together around sick beds and death beds. We can't take the pain away. We can't take mortality away. We can't necessarily, by prayer or laying on hands, take away disease. But we can be present, physically and emotionally present. That's the great gift. One of the greatest lessons I ever learned was when I was in the ICU in San Francisco with my acute epiglottitis, and my colleague and friend Mark Bellatini, the guy that redid the latest iteration of our hymnal and who was my successor at Star King Church Hayward, came to the hospital. I was intubated and could not speak, but he just sat there at the bedside and held my hand. You know, there's nothing more powerful. It wasn't about words. It wasn't about magic. It was about presence. Woody Allen said, half of life is showing up. Three quarters of love is showing up physically and emotionally, being there for our children, being there for our parents, being there for our spouses, for our family, for our extended family, showing up and saying, here I am. I can't fix it. I can't necessarily change it measurably, but know by my presence, by my touch, by my embrace, by my joy at your joy, by my tears with your pain, that I love you. Simple, powerful, not at all sentimental. I love you. It is what life is about. It is about what Mother's Day is. I love you.